breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
WHYY and Billy Penn, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight and Billy Penn. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to recap the London series, Phillies and the Mets. Phillies split the two-game series with New York, and we'll take a look ahead at the next week as the Phillies are right back on the road, taking on some pretty tough American League East teams. The schedule's going to get a little bit trickier here over the next week and a half or so. But lots to talk about from the Phillies' trip to London. So much to see, so much to do. And we'll talk to Justin Clue and Liz Rocher about all of this, of course. Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. Follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are you feeling here on this Monday night? Phillies finished up that series in London. That was quite a lot of fun, wasn't it?
I think the biggest question now is whether the Fanatic will ever come home. He seemed right at home there, and they really loved him. They were all over the Fanatic. He dressed up and they enjoyed it because he's big and green and ridiculous. It was just quite the love affair.
I had to wonder about how I marveled at his restraint on the ESPN telecast when he was carrying over the three hot cups of tea on a platter over to the ESPN broadcasters, because you just know that there was the voice, that little hamster was running inside the wheel to purposefully spill the tea on all of them. I was like, he's not going to spill the tea. Is he? Like, that's hot tea. And this is like equipment that professional broadcaster in the middle of the game. Like, he can't, like, popcorn's one thing. You know, the big things of popcorn he throws on John Kruk. That's one thing. But I was impressed. He actually just handed them the tea. It showed great maturity, I thought, on the part of the Fanatic.
The Fanatic is a chaos agent. He's not a maimer. You know?
That's right. He did not want to cause first degree burns. That's true. That's true. And it shows great. I think it shows growth for the Fanatic. And it hurts a little to say that, because the Fanatic, I don't want him to grow up that much. But joining me also, Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus, The Dirty Inning, and Absolutely Hammered. Follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, how are you, pal?
Well, way more exciting than the London series was today's development, which saw Buster Olney's Twitter account get hacked.
I was wondering when we were going to talk about this.
So not only does he hate the Mets, but that account broke a trade for the Phillies. They were acquiring Luis Robert Jr. from the White Sox. The Mets were sending Francisco Lindor to the A's. And Shohei
That's when I knew it was fake. when the Mets were sending Francisco Lindor to Oakland, I thought, that's where. Now I know it's fake for sure. Yeah, that was wild.
That was a fun couple of hours, I guess. For however long that took, but yeah, that was a nice little close to the weekend, I felt.
And, you know, of course, some of the talk radio stations in Philadelphia bought it and they were retweeting it. And, you know, oftentimes what you do is you look and you click on the profile and it said Buster Olney, 1.3 million followers. So you knew it was Buster Olney's account. But it's also like when you go through those phishing trainings in at work, you know, and when something just doesn't feel right, you know, it's like, does Buster Olney usually talk like that? This Buster, you know, what is, and this seems a little aggressive for Buster here. Maybe this isn't on the up and up. And then as you keep scrolling, you're like, oh, my man got hacked. You know, if it doesn't look right, just take a beat, you know, and scroll through it and just ask yourself, maybe we pumped the brakes on this for a second.
Well, it just goes to show that since this kind of thing used to happen so much more, clearly Twitter has been fixed in a lot of the most important ways from the old
sure.
days. People could just make their handles look like someone's name with a clever little lowercase L where an uppercase I should be. And next thing you know, you're breaking news that people are reacting to. But yeah, Twitter being in a obviously much better, fixed, cleaner, less buggy, well-managed state at this point.
Sure.
You can't get away with this as much anymore.
Right. No. Spot on, Justin. Spot on. And the fact that they left the account up and didn't freeze the account once it obviously became hacked, I thought was a stroke of genius. It was just beautifully done by the overlords there at X. It was really,
excellent,
really well handled.
Gambit, sir.
Exactly. I do like how they at least didn't hack Buster Olney's account and start trying to sell crypto. You know, it was obviously done with you know, somebody made good use of the hack.
Yeah, this was way better. This wasn't a business scheme. They didn't seem to even really know who Buster Olney was.
That was the best part of it. Like, I had no idea who this guy was. Someone's like, "So you hate the Mets?" He's like, "I hate Mets." I'm like, "Great.
Okay.
Well, he'll say anything we want."
He understood the assignment. He or she understood the assignment pretty quickly. Which was good to see. But yeah, that was a fun, entertaining thing here on Monday. But we're going to sit and we're going to start recapping this Phillies series in London against the Mets. The Phillies split the two games, obviously, dominating the first one 7-2. Should have had the second one, lost a 3-0 lead, and then a 4-3 lead in the ninth inning. Phillies lose 6-5 after the bullpen has an uncharacteristically bad game. Meanwhile, as the Phillies were in London, your Atlanta Braves were melting down in the nation's capital, losing the final three games of that four-game series. So the Phillies still lead Atlanta here, entering play on Tuesday by 9 games in the National League East. And according to Fangraphs, the Phillies right now have an 80.6% chance of winning the division. Only the Dodgers have a higher percentage chance of winning their division. The Dodgers are at 95.8%. And over the last 40 games, the Phillies are 30-10. The Braves, 18-22. So I know that we're going to talk about the Phillies. We're going to talk about the Phillies in London. But I think the one of the huge takeaways of the weekend was how feeble Atlanta looks. They just look, Justin, they look like a team that knows they lost their two best players and are watching a rampaging Phillies team with all of the vibes run away with this division. They don't look like the same team. Are they done? Are they cooked? Or can we say here on June 10th, the Braves are cooked in the division?
No. Okay. I'm still giving the Braves a couple of months. They're kind of letting the tide take them here a bit, but they didn't lose the only good players on their team, and right. They have enough hitters right now who we know are capable of doing more. I do think that they aren't going to go full bore at some kind of like immediate solution because they're set up well enough talent-wise and timeline-wise to not have to give up the store, especially in a year without Strider and Acuna. You're like, all right, well, next year we will presumably have those guys and, you know, maybe we have another shot at it. But they are set up so they're deep enough that even without those guys, it's not like they are without a chance here. And yeah, they put up the best August numbers of any offense last year, thanks to guys like Ozuna, Harris, Riley, and Olsen going off at that time of year. And those guys are all still in the lineup. So that wasn't even their hottest month of the season either. So this offense last year hit absolutely cartoonish levels. You can get a surge from them just about any time. So yeah, I think morale has taken a real hit in that locker room, and I think some of those crazy numbers they were all putting up last year have kind of crashed back into reality.
Yeah.
But most importantly, when it comes to the Braves and making the playoffs, I really think the most deciding characteristic is going to be that the National League has like one or two wild card spots that are just totally up for grabs, and it seemed like they're going to remain so for quite some time because the talent level is just so abysmal in the National League as far as teams go. The Braves could keep playing like they are now, maybe a little better, and still wake up in the playoffs come September, it feels like. So I do think the Braves, even with their losses, are capable of being a little better this year.
No, I think that's right. They are locked in really as that number one wild card right now. So even if they don't win the division, they're kind of in the position the Phillies were.
They're up like
four and a half
games in that wild card race still,
yeah.
Even after as badly as they've been playing.
Like, this feels weirdly familiar, but from a different vantage point.
Yes,
am I the only
yes.
one that gets that?
No,
this
totally.
Are we in the right place? Have we been Freaky Friday?
We Freaky Friday, the Atlanta Braves.
Look, you can only do this so many times before it gets repetitive. So I really appreciate the Phillies switching it up this year. So it's not like, oh, they're going into another NLDS and they're the underdog and the Braves are the top seed and blah, blah, blah. Like, no, we're going to spice it up a bit, keep people interested. I think that's smart.
But I'd see that was the nightmare scenario, of course. The Phillies run away with the division. The Braves, we had Freaky Friday, and then the same thing happens in the playoffs. But again, this is not the time to have that discussion.
We got to get a handle on words terrifying. Like nightmare. Disaster. Implosion. And
it'd be an implosion. Total letdown on the season. Yeah.
I saw somebody saying, they're close in all their losses. Like they're in it until they lose. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. On the one hand, it's good they're in every game until like the last second. But on the other hand, they're not getting that clutch hit. So maybe they're just like not a clutch team. And to make a statement like that, you have to be glossing over the 45 wins in which right. they got the clutch hit,
so
which is the highest number in baseball of any team to have wins. So we just kind of got to get a handle on what exactly classifies as a disaster. Losing one game to the Mets is not a disaster.
Yeah, Jose Alvarado's meltdown in the ninth inning, and it was a meltdown. That's a good word to describe what we saw from Alvarado, but it's so rare that it couldn't possibly be counted as a disaster. You know what I mean? Like, especially in the grand scheme of things with the 9-game lead in the East and just the way they've been pitching so well. You know, it's kind of funny, Liz. I've seen a lot of negative stuff about Jose Alvarado with that blown save. He has a 1.40 ERA in his last 28 appearances. He had walked more than one batter just once over that span. Like, he has been as locked down a closer or eighth inning guy, like your number one reliever. He's been as locked down as any and effective as any relief pitcher in baseball. And so there's absolutely no cause for any negative feelings or statements or emotions about Jose Alvarado. Like, his whole wild past, you know, like not being able to find the strike zone and all that stuff with the Rays, that's gone. That guy's been gone for like 2 or 3 years. But I think people are waiting for like the rug to get pulled out from under them with Jose Alvarado. Like, okay, crazy wild Alvarado is here. It was fun while it lasted, but now, and it's just, it doesn't jive with reason. Like, it was just a bad outing.
We've been hurt before. We all know this. We've been hurt before deeply. To a certain extent, I understand this general attitude. They're just not in this context. Like, just not now about Alvarado. Because it makes no sense. Like, I think people are just looking for something to freak out about. Again, another mindset I understand. This is all weird and new. It's been quite a long time since we've experienced this type of team, this type of winning, this type of feelings. These feelings are new and scary. We're all going through it together.
People like to feel like they were the first one to turn on a guy everybody loves, like right at the moment they started to decline.
Say, I knew it.
They love being able to say that they were on it first.
I'm the first one.
And they will spend an entire season complaining about Rob Thompson, even though he's not really an issue. But just in case a trend begins for which he is the culprit and it negatively impacts the Phillies, they'll get to say, I was saying this back in March or April. People get a lot of value out of that.
They do. They get a lot of run out of that.
I don't get it. I don't think it's very interesting or astute. It's just, you know, putting a name out there and waiting to see if they start failing. But I don't see how you could be turning on Alvarado at this point with everything he's been able to do in this bullpen. He is one of those like four guys in that bullpen that makes it a really, really good bullpen. And it would almost be more worrisome if a guy was completely, totally lights out, like, you know, Brad Lidge was when the Phillies won the World Series, because then you are just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
So for them to like pepper in these little like, whoops, like that didn't work.
He's
that
human.
Time.
Yeah.
That's just keeping people, I think, expectations at a healthier level.
Yeah. And that's right. I think that's 100% right. And you listen, there's a phrase out there that you can't win them all. I've heard it before. It applies to the Phillies here in 2024. You literally can't win them all. And the Phillies didn't win all of the games in London. But talking about the London series, it was an interesting couple of days in London. It obviously, as fans of a sport that play every day, it was weird getting the 2 days off and then the 2 days in London where they're starting very early in the day. And then there's the off day Monday before they start the series in Boston against the Red Sox starting on Tuesday. Bryce Harper said after the series was over that he'd like to see baseball set aside 2 weeks and bring four teams over to Europe for a round robin style tournament like they have in soccer. He says that would allow players to see different parts of the country. So it would allow them to stay a little bit longer, travel a little bit more, would give European fans kind of a format that they are used to and that they embrace. I'm curious what your guys' thoughts on this is, because it sounds like something that would have to happen in the middle of the season. And I don't logistically see how it could possibly work. I, for one, think it's a terrible idea for the teams involved in it, how it would mess everything up. But maybe there's a workable solution, or there's a way that it makes sense. I don't know. How do you guys feel? Liz, how do you feel about the idea of a 2-week round robin tournament featuring four teams in London and wherever else it is in Europe that they want to do it?
If time zones didn't exist, this would be great. If we could teleport, I think that would also be wonderful. Unfortunately, that's not possible. What Harper really wants is the Olympics or the World Baseball Classic. Those are that's what he wants.
We have those too, which is fun.
We have those. Yeah. They're just not happening right now. Yeah. And baseball will be back at the Summer Olympics in 4 years. He will be old, and unfortunately, that is what happens in life. He'll be old. He'll be what, 34? What am I talking about?
He'll still play.
34. And he'll still be playing.
He'll definitely
be on the team.
Absolutely be playing.
Yeah.
He'll have been sleeping in a hyperbaric chamber for three of those years. But that's what he really wants. I think it's a cute idea. I don't think that a season tournament is a time to go see the country, to go see a country. Again, that's the Olympics. And that's also the off season. He's thinking about the off season there when he goes on vacation. It's a cute idea. He's excited. He's excited, and he loves being excited. That's something about Harper that I've noticed. He doesn't just get excited. He enjoys being excited and like way into things. Like that's how he gets some of his thrills. And watching him get new opportunities to do that in a new country was very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, look, this sounds like a logistical nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine Major League Baseball pulling something like that off and it not having some kind of negative effect. It just sounds like he wants to drop it. What if we, the players, got to take a 2-week European vacation in the middle of the season?
That's exactly what this is.
That's what they want.
Seems like that would be a problem for a lot of the reasons.
Go to England on your own time.
I mean,
they could bring their families over and the kid. You know, that's what they want.
Major League Baseball is going to continue to try to blanket the earth in baseball and just have it be everywhere that it's not currently number one. You just get it everywhere. And if that means they're going to make a train in Europe with Bryce Harper's giant screaming head on the engine that's going to travel from country to country with a bunch of really intense baseball players inside of it, hopping out, playing a game in a little European hamlet, and then hopping back on. Yeah, that idea has a lot of appeal to me. I think that sounds awesome. But
are you watching Thomas the Tank Engine on your own, Justin?
I mean, we had to prep for the London series. I was
right.
Making sure to absorb a lot of the highest
all of the culture
levels of British media possible.
Understandable.
That is, But yeah, no, I feel like it's a nice idea from a guy who's excited to be playing where he's playing and is a willing face for MLB's marketing in these areas, I feel. So that's cool and everything. But yeah, that as an idea sounds insane.
The London series as it currently exists, is it worth it? Did it live up to the hype? Are you glad the Phillies took part in this, Justin? Like, was this a good experience, do you think? Would it have been better for the team to just to not have to worry about traveling to Europe? Like, and how do you think Major League Baseball and the Phillies and everybody else pulled this off? It was kind of cool seeing the Phillies as in the spotlight. But again, then these games were played at 1 o'clock and 10 o'clock in the morning. So I don't know how much of America actually experienced the London series.
Well, I think that having it at a strange time, quote unquote, I mean, 1 o'clock is not a strange time to have a baseball game, but to have like one game start at 10 a.m., first of all, it's one game. Secondly, having it at a weird time is, if that's the novelty we get from this, like that's the cost, is that we have to watch a game 3 hours earlier than we would have. I don't know. We're not paying that much of a cost as consumers. Right. So
more kids probably got a chance to see a game that starts at 10 in the morning, right?
Right. And, you know, again, this is a blip on the season. I know there's some concern about, like, oh, the travel and how's that going to impact their play. And, I mean, we'll see, but it doesn't seem to be a huge factor when we've had guys go to, you know, Seoul for the opening of this season in Korea, and they played in Mexico City exhibition games earlier this season. And, you know, they're obviously mindful of that being an issue. So, I don't know. It's always cool to see your team get picked for one of these, like, highlight games. It was cool when the Phillies played the Mets in the Little League Classic. I'd love to see the Phillies play in, like, the Field of Dreams game. I would love for baseball to, like, do different famous baseball movies and have, like, different fields set up in different places and have teams play in those games. You know, so that kind of stuff, that is cool to me. I see the appeal. So, yeah, I don't think this is like, I think anybody looking to find problems with this, you know, yeah, I'm sure it wasn't like perfect, but I, as fans, I don't see what you really have to complain about. I know people will complain about everything. People were complaining about Garrett Stubbs' slide on the last play of the game and how dangerous and scary it was.
I hate everyone.
But yeah, it is cool to see your team participate in this. But I think it can just be like, you know, like the Winter Classic in hockey or something, where like you're not always in it, but you might be in it. You know, a couple of years will go by, it'll be your turn. That's cool. That is, it's cool to spice things up a little bit and see your team play in like one of these novelty games.
I think it's totally worth it. You know, they do it in football, and it's a good time. And it was a good time here. It was really cool to see the Phillies, you know, be in the spotlight. And they had a great time. They fully took advantage of it. Everyone was really into it. And, like, the fans went over in droves. There was not a single frame that I didn't stop and look for someone I knew. And I did find people occasionally, and I'm like, that never happens, not even at, like, the Phillies stadium.
Right. Were there even people from England in the stands, or were they all Phillies fans who made the trip over, you know?
Oh, yeah, as far as expanding this to the British audience, it was a complete failure.
Yeah, Phillies fans just traveled over. But, you know, like, you saw, like, fans of baseball. It happens in NFL games where, you know, just fans of baseball will come out and they'll be wearing their Athletics jersey or, you know, their Twins jersey because, you know, whatever reason they've picked those teams.
There was the discount jersey at their local sports goods store, whatever it is however they call them in England, you know.
Sure.
I believe it's a poppycockery.
Ah, yes, that's right.
It's amazing to me that you think that baseball jerseys are on sale at sporting goods stores in the UK.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe like, you know, it's like the used.
Can I buy a cricket? Can I buy a cricket jersey here?
A cricket kit? I don't know.
Yeah, you're gonna buy one of those shirts that has Phillies and Mets logos all over it for some reason.
Did you see that?
You're just excited about the idea of baseball and competition.
Yeah, they missed. I don't know who was responsible for that, but they had to know it was wrong while they were doing it, and they had to feel bad about it. You know, there couldn't have been a feeling they thought, yeah, this was worth my time creating this particular piece of apparel. There's just no way anyone could have felt good about it.
I think it might have been Tommy Bahama. Mm. They do all sorts of stuff with MLB.
That Rob Manfred, well, A's fans can just become Giants fans across the bay. Like, we still have product in that area. It just comes from that product wing of the marketing department. It's like, oh, yeah, it's a baseball team and a baseball team. Put them both on the same thing, and it's a celebration of baseball. Yeah.
It's not like it was, I mean, if it was like this, like something that said London series and had Phillies and Mets, like, you know, like they're like you see with Super Bowl t-shirts and stuff like that, you know, Eagles, Chiefs or whatever, that's different. But this is just kind of like Phillies and Mets together, just on a jacket, you know, like just who's buying that? That's, you know, who's buying that? Somebody from Gardenshire. I don't even know if that's a real place over there, but no. You know, somebody is that a real place? No. Gardenshire. There's got to be a Gardenshire in England.
No.
I've never been, so I don't know. I guess, you know, what was your favorite moment of this series? I mean, I think universally for Phillies fans, it was the Harper slide, right? The Harper hits a home run, comes back to the dugout, scares the crap out of Rob Thompson. He thinks he's going to tear his knee as he's sliding in the artificial turf.
Oh, come on. He practiced that at least once.
I hope. I hope so, because that it did, like, he came to a sudden stop on that turf, man.
Yeah,
I was like,
he didn't
I don't know.
That. That's not quite
yeah, I don't think,
the
I think
Ronaldo
he expected that slide to continue a little further. Yeah, that was a little bit scary, but it was a really great moment. There's a reason he's called the showman, and he just lived
this.
Up to it. Yeah. So I Harper hits the home run in the debut, three hits, creates that classic moment. And then the game on Sunday, you know, it was just kind of one of those unfortunate games. Phillies go up 3-0. They continue to get some production from some of the guys on the bench. Taiwan Walker and Whit Merrifield this weekend in London. Okay, so the joke is, of course, just leave them in London, right? So that's we get it. But of all the times for these two guys to have their best performances of the season, like what is Liz? That was crazy to watch Whit Merrifield hit a 3-run home run to really put that game away, and then for Taiwan Walker to come out on Sunday and pitch really effectively for 5 2/3 innings was truly bizarre, and it was really fun to see those guys do that. But you know, it's kind of like a London fling. You know, is it going to just be something that they do in London and just forget about once they come back home?
I mean, for Merrifield, absolutely, that's 100%. For Taiwan Walker, we know that he has this in him. Mm-hmm. We know that he can pull off like an outstanding performance every now and then. So, you know, I think that there's a better chance that we could see more of that from Taiwan Walker. I do think they should have left Whit Merrifield there in London and no one would trust him. They could just like he could go work at that Phillies bar.
Now, Liz kind of froze up on us there for a second, but we missed that last part of what you had to say. So sorry about that, Liz.
He could go work at that Phillies bar in London.
Yeah, Passyunk Avenue.
Everywhere. Yes, Passyunk Avenue.
Yeah, yeah,
Whit
yeah,
Merrifield
yeah.
Could work there. I'm sure they need some qualified help.
No doubt about it. Does he? I wonder if he's a mixologist. I'm not aware of many alternate skills that Whit Merrifield may have. But let's talk about the bullpen usage on Sunday, Justin. It was an interesting decision for Rob Thompson when he went and he got Taiwan Walker in the sixth inning. There were two on with two outs. He could have gone to Matt Strom to kind of keep the game scoreless, to keep the lead, pardon me, at 3-0, keep the Mets scoreless. But instead, he went to Gregory Soto, who has looked better in recent appearances, but of course is probably the shakiest member of the bullpen right now. And the reason he said he wanted to do that was he wanted to get a full inning out of Matt Strom and have him start an inning. And he thought that Soto had good success against, I forget who it was he was facing. It was Brandon Nimmo, I think, and JD Martinez in that spot. And of course, then Nimmo and Martinez burn him for hits, and the game's tied 3-3. They could have gone to Strom to finish off that inning and then had him start the next inning. Strom has pitched more than one inning before. He's been very good at that in his career with the Phillies. So I guess it was just kind of an interesting call by Rob Thompson, Justin. But as you said, he's not going to get everything right. I think he's pushed way more buttons correctly than he has wrongly so far this year. And this time around, it didn't work out.
Walker was having a great day. I mean, I know Thompson's a squeezer. He likes getting one more inning, one more batter from a guy. And it's not like him to pull his starter just because he's gotten into trouble. And to be clear, that was the first trouble Walker was in all day when he got into that spot. On the one hand, pulling him seems like the prudent move because it was Taiwan Walker, and we've seen things go south fast for him on the mound. He throws hittable pitches that batters don't miss, but he was throwing pitches for strikes. He was only at 80 pitches, or he had less than 80 pitches at the time. Four out of the five innings he'd already pitched had been 1-2-3 innings, so he was moving efficiently, and that walk to Pete Alonso was his first and only free pass of the day. So he missed his spot with a four-seamer and walked him with a 3-0 count, so it looked like he was starting to maybe, you know, get a little wobbly out there, but he was keeping the ball up, which was another problem for him. And yeah, both the one that Torrens hit for a leadoff single and the one that Alonso used to draw the walk were a couple of inches above the zone. So what I'm saying is, even with his best stuff, I can see how Thompson might have been getting a little nervous. And you know what? like, fair enough. It's Taiwan.
Thompson took criticism for leaving him in a couple batters too long in previous starts, right?
When he, as I was going to say, Thompson leaves him in and he gives up a hit there, and we're hammering Thompson for doing the opposite. So I don't have a big problem with, even after Walker's solid first five, with him getting pulled there.
Right.
But going to Soto in that trouble spot, I mean, that kind of rattles me, because now Soto he had a great May, like you said. It's got, you know, is Thompson going to use, if he's going to use him regularly, like in the mix with the other guys, then he's got to keep using him to maintain balance in the bullpen. I think we all kind of consider him outside of that group of really dominant relievers, and he's somebody that kind of like makes him a little more nervous because he allows base runners. But if Thompson wants to keep using him, then he's got to get him in there sometimes. And he doesn't think of him as, oh, it's everybody else in Gregory Soto. It's like, no, he's part of the bullpen and I use him as I see fit. So he's going to stick him in that spot, it feels like, probably most of the time. Because like you said, getting an inning out of Matt Strom was the more valuable part. But it's just tough because Strom is kind of like made for that situation, especially this year. He's the guy that gets you out of that. And Soto's just... He can't. He's not the guy I want to see pitching in that situation. So Taiwan Walker getting into trouble feels just as ominous as Gregory Soto inheriting base runners. So that was just not a helpful transition.
Yeah.
Soto faced 58 batters with runners on base this season, and he's got a 7.30 ERA what he does. And he's allowing hard hit balls over 40% of the time when there's men on base. The only guys with worse numbers in those columns are not on the team anymore. And if you're going to have a guy in there who gives up hard contact with men on, why even take Walker out of the game?
No, I agree with you. I agree, Liz, taking Walker out of the game. I would have done that too, because we had Pepper Thompson earlier in the season for leaving Walker in too long, leaving him in a batter too long, and for getting hit, even though he'd pitched really well through five innings, trying to get him through that sixth inning. He'd given up some runs in previous starts, so that was fine. But here's the deal, you know, like, who do you want in a tight spot? You want the more reliable guy in a tight spot. I'd rather Strom try and get that final out and keep it 3-0. I mean, I guess the other side of the coin is, well, you just want one out from Soto and three outs from Strom the next inning, as opposed to one out from Strom and then using Soto the next inning to get three outs. But again, Strom can pitch multiple innings. I just wouldn't have used Soto in that high leverage spot right there. And I get that he hadn't pitched in like 5 or 6 days, so you want to get guys work. You don't want them to go too long without pitching. But if the goal there is to protect the 3-run lead, Matt Strom gives you the best opportunity to do that in that spot. And then you either bring him out for the next inning, or you go Soto in the next inning where he's not worrying about trying to pitch with guys on base and throw strikes. Well, we're going to change topics here. We're going to talk a little bit about Trey Turner, and Liz is going to take the rest of the podcast off. Justin and I are going to take you through the last part of this episode of Hitting Season. And Justin, Trey Turner sounds like he is ready to come back this week without a rehab assignment. And I guess for veterans, you know, he said himself, like, they're kind of pointless. They kind of just are like a checking the box. I don't really get anything out of a rehab assignment, you know? So, okay. I mean, remember Bryce Harper's rehab assignment last year when he was coming back from his injury? He like ripped it apart. and then didn't hit for a month. So, you know, yeah, he destroyed a couple of poor minor league pitchers and then struggled at the major league level. So I think everybody, we should be prepared for some Trey Turner struggles at the start when he first comes back. It would not be crazy since he's been gone for so long. Brandon Marsh is also not far away either. So, and then Cody Clemens is on the injured list with the back spasm. So they have three guys who are going to be coming off the injured list here pretty soon. And so they have some interesting roster decisions coming up here. Edmundo Sosa is obviously ensconced himself as a vital part of this team, but he's going to lose his starting shortstop job. The Phillies are 23-9 since Trey Turner went on the injured list, and that's largely because Sosa is hitting .294 with 11 extra base hits and an .896 OPS while playing stellar defense at shortstop in Turner's absence. So there's obviously a lot of interest in keeping his bat in the lineup, moving him, trying to get him some reps in a corner outfield spot. I think he's played 5 innings in the outfield in his major league career. Is this a viable solution? I mean, I guess we don't really know, but, you know, I think if they can find a way, if Sosa I don't think we ever any of us thought he was going to OPS 900 for the rest of the year, the whole year, if he was the starting shortstop. But he's been a really reliable right-handed bat on this team, and I think they're going to try and find a way to keep it in the lineup as much as they can. Do you think this? Do you think a move to the outfield's coming here? And if so, do you think it's going to work?
I don't know if I'd call it a move. I'd call it an experiment. And it feels. I mean, if it keeps his bat in the lineup, then it's worth at least trying because, yeah, he's kind of made himself undeniable. It's not just like, oh, he rose to the occasion. It was like, yeah, no, he's like this critical part of the Phillies offense at the moment.
Right.
And if there's one thing Thompson's really good at, it's getting everybody playing time, mm-hmm. which occasionally, you know, to a fault. But there's really not a guy on this team, on this like 26-man roster, who's like getting iced out. I mean, I guess you could say Pache doesn't have much of a role, but you know, you see him getting playing time, you know, getting pinch runner, like he gets dropped in there as a pinch runner or a late defensive replacement at times. So I think he's not going to struggle finding roles for Edmundo Sosa to play. And like, that's kind of the luxury of having a guy in Sosa's position who can produce at the level he's producing, is that you can give other guys a day of rest. You can give starters a day of rest without like losing that production in the lineup. You're still getting it from somewhere. And that's something that I think they're being a little more mindful of this year too, is just guys exhaustion and burnout and everything. And having a guy like Sosa around, he's going to help you with that. So yeah, any way they can find to keep him in there. It's not like it's crazy to think of him being being an outfielder. But yeah, obviously that's going to be an issue, and it's just the Phillies running into another wonderful problem to have, where too many people are coming through at times when they need the most.
Right. So we got to figure out how this bench is going to look here. So Sosa is going to be sticking around. When Brandon Marsh comes back and Cody Clemens is ready to come back, they're basically going to have to get rid of three people who have been playing, because you're going to need, you basically have Edmundo Sosa and you're going to need two outfielders, two backup outfielders. And coming into the year, those were Whit Merrifield and Christian Pache. But you've since had Cody Clemens come up. He's been on the IL, but he was extremely close. And was playing very well, plays multiple positions, can play corner outfield and can play third base, second base, first base. So that has a lot of value to the team. You mentioned Christian Pache. David Dahl has come up and he almost won the game on Sunday in London with that clutch home run. He would have to be put on waivers, meaning another team could snap him up if the Phillies decide to move on from him and decide not to keep him. Weston Wilson will certainly be one of the players who is sent back down to AAA. Poor Weston Wilson, you know, he just can't. He's so much that fringe guy, you know. He just, you know, he gets to be with the team like, you know, 10, 11 days out of the year, and that's about it. But, you know, how do you see this all shaking out? There's the Whit Merrifield situation too, because yes, maybe he's going to wake up. Maybe the trip to London woke him up. You're paying him $8 million. He did make an All-Star team last year. He's not an All-Star caliber player, but he has shown you that he can hit well enough for at least a half of baseball to still be a productive player. And he does have that positional flexibility as well. Christian Pache, he'd have to be released and clear waivers, not picked up by another team. And I think somebody else would go out and get him. So there's a lot of different moving pieces here with some of these guys coming back. Who ultimately do you think you would like to see stick around?
Well, as much of a risk of losing David Dahl as you're going to have, I think, yeah, he's also going to get he's going to be shown the exit, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as far as like who to keep around, I'm not sold on Whit Merrifield. I was going to use that as my cool moment from London, that he finally like found a moment to come through in a big way. But it's June 10th. These decisions will be made, you know, in the next couple of weeks. We'll see how much of June goes by before this, you know, this conversation is really being had and conclusions are being drawn. But I don't know, man. What we've seen from Whit Merrifield has just not been good. It has just not been. It's not just like, oh, he's got to snap out of his funk. I know Thompson said the other day, well, the only way for him to get, you know, get back in his groove is to keep getting more and more playing time. And that you know, you could take that to mean, well, the Phillies are, you know, they paid for a free agent. You know, this isn't just like a guy they picked up during spring training. This is like, this is a guy who they said that we were going to go get an outfield bat. We need an outfield bat this winter. This was that guy. You know, this was the execution of a plan. Expectations were higher for him, even in a more limited role. And he just has, unfortunately, he just has not hit at that level. He has just not been able to be that guy for them. And, you know, on the one hand, is his role so important that he needs to be that guy? Like, Edmundo Sosa basically is that guy now. So in a way, he's kind of like he's been made a little redundant, especially if Sosa can play in the outfield. So I don't know. I guess I'm just circling the fact that this might be a good time to consider, you know, hey, if we want to have the same amount of depth going into the postseason, if we want to still be able to cite that as a strength, and Whit Merrifield is in there, I mean, he's one of a couple of guys who really just hasn't, he just makes people nervous, you know, when he's in the game. So I would like to see a plan based around the idea that, you know, maybe the Whit Merrifield thing just didn't work.
I think you're probably keeping one of Pache and Merrifield because you need that right-handed bat. You need that right-handed outfielder. You need that platoon mate. And even if Sosa is going to be that guy some of the time, I don't know that he's like going to play, you know, against all the lefties and play left field. We don't know if he can play the position. So that might be a little bit of a risky move. So, but neither Pache also hasn't hit this year, hasn't hit a darn. No. And there was a lot of conversation early in the season. Well, his exit velocity is, how can you get rid of a guy with that kind of exit velocity? Yeah. The numbers are not there and they haven't been there all season for Pache. And I don't think it's being borne out by bad luck. He's just not a terribly good offensive major league player. Whit Merrifield can play more positions for you, and you're paying him more money. Christian Pache plays left and center, but he's elite defensively in those two spots, and he is as fast as Whit Merrifield is. Merrifield's big strength is his speed. Pache has that same speed. I think Whit Merrifield probably offers a little bit more offensively. I think he's got a little bit more of an upside offensively than Christian Pache does. If I'm picking between the two of one of those guys that I have to keep, I'm probably going to pick Merrifield at this point. I keep going back and forth on this, though. I know a couple of weeks ago I said, I think you got to get rid of Merrifield and move on from him. But if you've got to keep a right-handed hitting outfielder, and you have to choose between Merrifield and Pache, the upside with Merrifield is just a little bit more, and he gives you a little bit more positional flexibility. So I would probably stick with Merrifield. I probably would release Christian Pache. And then I think you're choosing between Cody Clemens and David Dahl at this point. And Cody Clemens, I think, has proven to be the more reliable. He's had more chances than David Dahl, certainly. Dahl was tearing it up in AAA, but so was Clemens. Dahl, I think you let him go. I agree with you. I think Cody Clemens, because he can play those different positions for you, it gives you more flexibility. You can really move things around. And so I think you're probably sticking with Merrifield. You're sticking with Clemens. And if you have to get rid of some players, Weston Wilson is going. I think David Dahl is going. And I think Christian Pache probably is like the last guy out the door. That's the toughest decision for me is Pache, even though I don't think he's terribly great. But all of this, Justin, could be rendered pointless if the Phillies go out and make a trade for an outfielder. Now, the fake Buster Olney tweet that the Phillies had acquired Luis Robert Jr. aside, there is reporting out there that the White Sox are looking to move they are at least listening to offers on Luis Robert Jr., which, of course, they would add a 13-game losing streak. They're listening to everybody. They say the reports are that they want to haul bigger than what the Padres got for Juan Soto. Now, this is, of course, laughable, as you are laughing, and for very good reason, in that Juan Soto is so much better than Luis Robert Jr., as good as Luis Robert Jr. has been at times in his career. And he's signed for a long time, so you have team control. He's a young player. He's stuck on a dead team walking White Sox team where he just has no motivation to play whatsoever. But you are not getting that kind of a return. You're not getting close to that kind of a return for Juan Soto, let alone beating it. But the White Sox can afford to hold him and just say, all right, fine, nobody's going to give him to us. He's under team control through like 2027. They're under no obligation to move him. That said, if the Phillies were to make a deal for Luis Robert Jr., how aggressive should they get? I mean, for me, Andrew Painter and Aiden Miller are off the table completely for a Luis Robert Jr. move, and probably also for like a Kyle Tucker move, because Kyle Tucker's name has been linked to the Phillies. I think Jeff Passan mentioned his name in passing, talking about the Phillies looking for an outfield target. I wouldn't trade either of those guys. I wouldn't trade either of those two Phillies prospects for either of those two guys. Everyone else, I am here and I am ready to listen.
I think that's the right place to be. You know, that's kind of the measured place to be. When Dombrowski got here, the fear is, oh, he's going to wreck the farm system. And at the time it was like, well, go ahead. What's down
there?
Don't
threaten me with a good time now.
Yeah. But I think the right approach to what the Phillies want to be, which is not a team that has to go all in and mortgage the future and give up all these prospects. People have been following, like, Dombrowski's been good about getting supporting players for guys who are, you know, maybe low top 10 in their farm system, mm-hmm. or low top 20 in their farm system, guys who probably aren't even super well known to an average fan or somebody who's not making a point to follow the minor league system. He's been able to get really great value out of those guys in a lot of cases. I think hanging on to the to what are two of the most promising prospects, and honestly, even a guy like George Clausen is worth maybe not putting like a untouchable mark,
right,
but just being mindful about, like, hey, you know, the Phillies want to be a team that continues to contend. They don't want to be a team that blows it up this year or goes so hard all in this year that they're hurting themselves in a few years to come. There's not a window that's slamming shut in the near future for the Phillies. So being mindful that, yeah, we have something in these prospects at the top of our system here, and just, you know, making sure to keep a hold of them while still shopping and taking advantage of teams like the White Sox, who are selling off again, or are at least willing to make a deal, is how they're going to, you know, be able to achieve that, by stay competitive this year, address the areas of need that they have, while also, you know, not blowing up their farm system. I think it's completely reasonable, and I think they're totally capable of it. I honestly just think it's hilarious watching the White Sox, who just feel like they've been watching like lousy small market teams with crappy owners, like from far away, and now they're just trying to do an impression of one. They're like,
yeah,
can have our guy for the exact same amount of players that you got for Juan Soto. And like, yeah, but that was a different guy. You get that, right? Like, it's a different guy who can do different things, so he's
right,
worth a different amount of trade. You don't, you
right,
gotta,
these are not the all same right players, right? We're not connecting on that. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm curious. It does feel like the Phillies are such a not precarious, but they're precisely put together. And, you know, I hesitate to like get rid of a guy like Pache, because I'm like, yeah, but he really likes being here and they all get along, and, you know,
yeah, they like him too
in the season, but like, you know, he's a popular guy, he's a fun guy. And I'm just curious. I'm not saying a trade ruins that or anything. No, especially in this case, this trade makes this team better. Like this a trade like that with a guy like Robert or Tucker in the lineup has just pretty much eliminated any excuse to not win the whole World Series.
Right.
So like that's not a bad thing. It's just more like I'm curious how you fit these guys all together. Like we turned around one day and the Phillies had the lowest outfield production, like one of the lowest outfield productions of anybody in the major leagues. And it was like,
yeah,
oh, we have this is like a problem. Yeah, something kind of has to be done here, because this is
right,
not great. So I'll be curious to see, should they make a deal like this, where they fit a guy like this in. But I'm very encouraged by the level of guy that they are looking at.
Yeah, because when we talked about this a couple weeks ago, we were asking ourselves, are they just kind of looking for like a spare guy, like a fourth outfielder guy, like a platoon guy? And it doesn't sound like that's the market that Dave Dombrowski is fishing in. We don't know for sure. These are all obviously secondhand, third-hand accounts from national writers and whatnot. But there's a lot of smoke there, and it certainly does sound like the Phillies recognize that this is an issue. And you're not getting, you know, Nick Castellanos is certainly one of the biggest reasons why the outfield has not been terribly productive. He's been been hot the last week or so. He's starting to elevate the baseball. He's starting to hit some balls hard, hit the balls out of the park. So we might be getting ready to see a nice little hot streak from Nick Castellanos, but it's not reliable. So you'd like to get some sure things in the outfield. And the left field platoon of Brandon Marsh has been good, but the right-handed side of that platoon has not been productive. And of course, the offensive production in center with Johan Rojas has not been there, but he wasn't supposed to be an offensive force anyway. So it is interesting who gets moved in, who would get moved out, who loses playing time, how they work all that out. If they were to go get Luis Robert Jr. Or Kyle Tucker, you know, how that affects everybody. But that's Dave Dombrowski's bailiwick, and so we will let him figure that out. But we'll certainly be keeping an eye on the stove as it gets warmer and warmer here over the next few weeks. Justin, to finish things up, the Phillies are going to get ready to take on the Boston Red Sox for three games in Boston against a pitching staff that is almost as good as the Phillies staff. The Boston starting rotation has been almost as lights out as the Phillies starting rotation for much of the year. So they are 33-33. Their offense isn't much to write home about, but they have thrown the ball very well. And then the Phillies get three games in Baltimore against the 42-22 Orioles. For everyone saying the Phillies haven't played anybody, this is going to be a weekend series where the Phillies will certainly be playing one of the American League's best teams, and that could be a World Series preview that all of us would really enjoy. So two series on the road against two very tough teams. I think a 500 record coming out of these two series would be, even though it wouldn't match the output the Phillies have given us here over the course of these last 40 games or so, would be fine by me. And the Good Fight noted that even if the Phillies play 500 ball the rest of the way, they will still win about 94 games. So that's not what we're looking at. It's not what we're looking for. 94, I mean, a 500 record the rest of the way, I think, might be a little disappointing given how they've played. But certainly with these next six games, this is a really, really tough part of their schedule. They've done a lot of traveling. They went from Philly to Denver to San Francisco, back to Philly to London, and now to Boston. So they haven't played a lot of tough teams yet, but the schedule, the flying, all the cross-country stuff, that part of it has been grueling, and they've played really well through all of that. So how are you feeling for this week, these games against the Red Sox and the O's?
Yeah, I'm not particularly concerned. I'm curious to see, where we are after what has been considered, you know, this very soft part of their schedule. But at no point did we think like, oh yeah, the Phillies are just a team. Like it is, I've heard it on other podcasts, but they're like, oh, the Phillies are playing above their heads. Like this is not the real version of that. But I gotta tell you, in a league where you can't. The hard teams are hard to find. Like
very hard to find.
A bunch of really good teams. Like I don't know what to tell you, they're just not around.
Like look at the power rankings. You go like down six or seven, and you're like, okay, that's the end of the really good teams. You know.
But here are a couple. Like you said, the Red Sox. You know, they're not looking great at the plate, but their pitching staff is going to match up well with the Phillies, and I think you're going to see some low scoring games there. Mm-hmm. And then coming to Baltimore, that's going to be. I don't want to call it a test because, you know, I don't think the Phillies are worthy of being tested at this point. I think it'll be a challenge. It'll be more of a challenge than like, you know, playing the Rockies and White Sox for six games. But this team can definitely beat good teams. They swept the first place Brewers, you know, like they are capable of beating good teams. So it's more just like an interesting, hey, these are two teams whose goodness is still relatively new. They have not played each other a ton. They're not super familiar with each other. And it'll honestly just be an interesting and cool matchup that, like, yeah, here in 2024, these are two of the best teams. And it's very realistic that this is a World Series matchup. So I'm more curious as to just see what the Phillies look like when they're playing a team like that. Not because I think they're incapable of beating them, but I want to see, like, how their game changes and how they evolve.
Yeah, that's going to be a series where somebody wins two out of three. And it's just a matter of like, whatever game decides decides the series, you know, who has the edge, which ball bounces a different way, whatever it might happen to be. But, you know, I don't think you're drawing any grand conclusions from this week, but especially that series in Baltimore. But should be a fun week of baseball here as the Phillies try to get back into a regular flow after all of this travel, after all the weirdness and the off days, you know, how that impacts things here at the beginning of this Boston series. It certainly didn't impact the Phillies in London. They played played. They look like themselves in London, even after a couple of days off. And this team's pretty even keel. Interesting listening to the Phillies trainers telling the players, don't sleep on the flight from London to Boston. Sleep when you get to the hotel. Like, they're trying to keep these guys' circadian rhythms where they're supposed to be. So they're mapping all this out. They're seeing all the different angles. And so hopefully they'll hit the ground running on Tuesday in Boston against the Red Sox. All right. Let's finish things up here, Justin, with some final thoughts. What you got for us this week?
I just want to say that after a recent Braves loss, the Atlanta was going to have an off day the next day. And manager Brian Snitker told reporters, I've never known an off day to not come at a good time. Which, you know, for a guy who's having such an exasperating season, you know, that's got to be true. But you got to wonder, I guess he doesn't mean before the NLDS.
right? Yeah, those not, off
did
days.
Did we not spend an entire postseason talking about this? That the Braves don't want a day off? That was the worst thing ever, that it was basically cheating, that the league is out to get them because they had the audacity to give them time off before a playoff series. And now he's out here saying, oh, I've never known an off day to not come at a good time. Well, October, that's a
time. That was a bad time.
And you don't like them then. So, you know, I don't know, just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, there was an off day between game two and game three of the NLDS as well. And that didn't come at a good time either. So, I think that's a fair point. And Brian Snitker and the Braves, certainly watching them just face plant against the Nationals this week. And I saw all three of those games on Friday, Saturday and Sunday. That was fun. I mean, as fun as the Philly series in London was, this was a close second watching a scrappy Nationals team take care of a Braves team that looks like they know this isn't their year. But we'll see. It's not over yet. I agree with you. The division's not the Phillies to wrap up and put in their back pocket yet. But it is a different looking Braves team right now than we have seen really at any point in the last 4 or 5 years. All right, everybody. Look, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Liz, for popping on the podcast here. And we are going to make sure that we get you some more podcasts this week. I'll be back midweek with a podcast. Justin and Liz will have a podcast at the end of the week, getting you ready for that Baltimore series. And want to have you check out all of our work at all the different places that we do our work. I'm at The Good Fight and at Billy Penn. I've got an article up there recapping the London series. You want to check that out. Justin also has some work up at Billy Penn, as well as Baseball Prospectus and the Hittin' Season Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/hittin'season. That's where The Dirty Inning and Absolutely Hammered live. And of course, you can read all of Liz's work at sports.yahoo.com. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.